Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. I hope you're all doing well. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. And today's episode, I was absolutely blessed to get to sit down with Tanya Moody. That is Tanya of Motherland, of Star Wars, Sherlock. The list goes on, but I mean, what more do you need to know other than that? Well, I'll tell you what you do need to know. You need to know about the songs that have soundtracked Tanya's creative journey. And you're in for a treat because this is such a good chat. I'm not going to tell you anything about it because you're about to listen to it. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track podcast, then why not have a look in the archives, because you'll also find a bundle of episodes with some of your favourite actors, musicians, producers, DJs, comedians. Just go and have a rummage around and you'll see plenty of stuff that I'm sure you're going to want to give a listen to. Also, a big thank you to 76 for producing this, and much love to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Okay, back to business. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Tanya Moody. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fairwear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we're recording and sitting opposite me today over the means of Zoom is Tanya Moody. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
So we've never met before and I was just saying to you before I pressed record, I'm going to ask you how you are once I've pressed record. So So how have you been in this bizarre world we're living in at the moment. I should point out that if you're listening to this and lockdown is over, we're recording this during the hopefully the latter stages of lockdown. How have you found it as a human being, you know, with a family, and how have you found it as a creative?
Well, about 2 weeks into lockdown, I fell downstairs and broke my ankle.
Oh.
So that was obviously deeply unexpected. And it kind of like put lockdown in a totally new spin. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like everyone else was locked down and I was like locked down as well. Like I was not only in the house, but I just, you know, I haven't been able to use whatever resources I think I would have done hypothetically under the circumstances otherwise, because I'd sort of planned, I was at the early stages of lockdown. And I think for most of us in the early stages, you sort of go, okay, I can do this. Right. I'm going to exercise in these days. And then I'm going to go for a walk in these days. And then you sort of get a plan. Yeah. Whether or not you stick to it is a whole other thing. Because yeah. Obviously, you know, my friend, you know, oh, I ended up spending all the time in bed, or I didn't get anything done that I wanted to. I didn't read any books I wanted to, you know, because you're dealing with it, right, all the time. So I, you know, I'd sort of planned to be super fit and busy and agile and stuff and working out. And that there was just this kibosh put on that. And so I've had to go to really like kind of dark places psychologically and battle these kind of internal demons. While on the outside, it looks like I'm just sort of sitting there with my foot up in a way.
How long was you like that for?
Well, I'm still like that. And in fact, I've got to go back in this Friday for another operation on it.
Oh, you've done a proper job on it then?
I've done a job on it. And my partner's been great. He's been like, well, at least you're not working, because that'd be really embarrassing to have to turn down work because you fell down the stairs. Do you know what I mean? So it's like timing has been good, but...
Has he still got sympathy? Is he still giving you sympathy? That's quite a few months.
He never actually did give me sympathy because I mashed up my ankle because I was trying to play a prank on my daughter.
All right, here we go. Now we're finding out now.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It was April Fool's Day and I was trying to punk my kid. And I got overexcited and like, you know, went arse over tit down the stairs. And so both of them were like...
So that massively backfired, that, didn't it?
Do you know what I mean? So both of them have been, I've allowed them to heartily take the piss out of me at any given trying to make, you know, do penance and like, you know, be as active as I can.
Yeah.
But I think they're both a bit over it now.
Okay. Well, let's talk music.
Hey.
For track one, Tanya, I want you to tell me the song that you think has the greatest ever intro.
Yeah. So Papa was a Rolling Stone, right? So that actually was like a really, really hard question.
Everyone always says that's the tough one.
It is, because the thing is, I think as well that, to be honest, there's not enough credence given to intros in general, I think. I mean, I'm not a musician. I'm not a music maker. Yeah. So I'm laying myself open to all sorts of like criticism and backlash and like, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, when I was going through all of my music and going through my partner's music and stuff and whatever we had in the house and really going back over songs that we love or maybe even are ambivalent to, but you have to give it credit for its intro, it makes you realize how many songs kind of get straight to it. Mm-hmm. And intros are kind of, they're brief introductions because actually the body of the song is the thing. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So then you end up, you know, very quickly you end up feeling like, oh, I'm actually looking for a needle in a haystack, in a sense. You know, what makes an intro good? Is it its length? Or is it just, sometimes it's just like, you know, it's just like a few notes or something, or a few kind of like beats of a drum, or like, you know, da 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 da, and then the song starts, but it makes you feel something. So then yeah. That's a great intro because that, there's something about that got me, you know.
It's strange what you said there, because, you know, where it's something instant, that is the, I think people generally sort of lean towards that just because I think that's pop music. Pop music is like grab ya straight away. It's got to be straight in with the hook and especially nowadays where there's so much music everywhere. Like I think a lot of people now write music with radio in mind, trying to get to hook people straight away because people are so easily distracted now. But then again, when you think of, you know, Papa Was a Rolling Stone being a great example of that, you know, or Pink Floyd or anything like that, you know, these were not written with radio in mind. You know, they were not trying to hook someone straight away. It was like, I mean, that the beginning of Papa Was a Rolling Stone, oh, it's epic, isn't it?
It really is, because it tells what I noticed about it when I listened to it again, because we all kind of know it, right? It's something that's gone into our psyche. We feel it. The second you hear the first kind of like opening beats, you know it's that song,
yeah.
And you know where you're going in the song, and you know that people know the story of the song. It's like folklore, isn't it? It's a legend. It's mythical that this song is epic. So when I was like re-listening to it, it made me realize that somehow in the orchestration, they set the entire mood. It's like a film soundtrack. And then, you know, I sort of realized how many images I was seeing of what was about to happen in that song.
Yeah.
And that by the time all that tension has been built up because of the layers of the orchestration, by the time he starts to sing those first few words, you know, it was the 3rd of September, that thing, you realize actually he's already partway through the kind of the emotions and the telling of that story. He's already lived a lot of it, and he's coming in at the peak of the tension. And we're supposed to pick it up from there, you know?
I don't know if... Were they still signed to Motown for that? Because...
No idea.
Because that would have been around the time... Because obviously, like, everything that Berry Gordy was doing was, like, them short, sharp Motown sweet soul pop records. And, you know, famously told Marvin Gaye that what's going on, you know, wasn't going to work. You know, it wasn't poppy enough. And then obviously went on to be the biggest selling album. And it's the same with the Temptations. I mean, that track is a mile away from them kind of, you know, them really early sweet soul pop records that Motown were putting out. It was a real, there's much more maturity and much more, it almost feels like they've become socially aware, and obviously it would have come out at a time where there was lots of change, I would have imagined, going on where they were.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that, because I think a lot of those Motown songs have, like, do epic introductions.
Mm.
It's a thing, isn't it? Who was that? Who's their famous producer, right, that was famous for all their kind of using orchestration, lots of strings, et cetera, et cetera?
Phil Spector.
Yeah. He was like the master of the introduction, wasn't he, really?
Yeah, just a bit. River Deep, Mountain High. Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
All
those things.
Is there, I mean, my favourite intro of all time is a Phil Spector production, and it is just that dumb. Dum dum cha at the beginning of Be My Baby by the Ronettes.
There you go. Beautiful. Beautiful. And I nearly chose this one. Got to give it up, Marvin Gaye.
Oh.
Nearly chose that one.
What a record.
It's like you get, suddenly you hear this party atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you're there. Like there are times when I get caught by surprise. I'll be in the kitchen or something cooking and washing up. And it comes on and I'll think, where is it? And the party, and all these people are going, yeah. And the music, you kind of just start moving in spite of yourself. So that is I nearly chose that one, I have to say.
Okay. You're allowed an honourable mention. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Track two, Tanya. The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Oh, yeah. I felt a bit funny choosing this one because it's not... You know, I don't get any kind of like street cred for this song or anything.
I don't know. I think it's a great record.
You know, but yeah. So this one was The Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby and The Range. And that was, so it's released April 1986. So that means I was 14. And I was born and raised in Canada in the 70s and 80s, and it was just my personal karma that I happened to get myself in a lot of scrapes. I happened to encounter a lot of, like, racist abuse amongst my peers or people I didn't know, whatever, at that time in the 70s and 80s. And even though I was a little girl, I get a lot, like, some of it was quite physical. Like, it got a bit, it got hairy sometimes, do you know what I mean? And obviously I had, you know, I did have some friends and good friends and stuff, but that all those experiences really shaped my psyche a lot. And I was quite sort of introverted because of those experiences, and quite kind of, I really went inward. And because you're young and you don't really have a kind of an overview of the world and relationships and everything, you can sort of think, well, this is the world. Do you know what I mean? Because you're young, everything is kind of blinkered. So I kind of was in a place by that age where I thought, well, I just don't have a place in the world. And that's just the way it is. And white people just don't like black people. Or I'm going to have to just avoid that my whole life. Do you know what I mean? And at that age, it's more of a feeling. It's an imprint. It's not even, I don't think it's that sort of articulated in your mind. And then when I heard that song, I remember kind of being really like, hang on. There's a musician, someone who has power and has agency and who has a voice who's being heard. And there's a very famous song and has a, you know, this ability to make music and reach people. And he's saying the opposite. He's saying, I'm your ally. And I'm with you. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're singing about the civil rights era and just saying, and I remember hearing the lyrics first time, I would just sit by the, I don't know, whatever it was I was listening to at the time in the 80s, the radio, or I didn't have the record or anything. And I'd just sit and listen to it again and again. And I'd just be like, wow, I'm not alone. And I've got allies out there and there are people like him out there. And he just sort of, it's like he threw me a lifeline. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, what emotion would that have been, Tanya?
God, it's like, I felt released. I don't know, I just felt like, I mean, I felt love, really. I felt his love.
Yeah.
Even though I don't, you know, obviously I don't know, I've never met him, whatever, but I think that's the power of art, isn't it? And that's the power of music.
Yeah. You've chose two records already that... the lyrics are very much a story.
Mm.
Both the Temptations and that Bruce Hornsby track, they're very story-like, aren't they? The songs, like the Bruce Hornsby track, were very, very similar in age, Tanya. And when I first heard that, that was probably one of the first records that woke me up to, I guess, prejudice and all sorts of things. And it was that and Labby Siffre.
Oh, yeah!
Hearing Something Inside So Strong, which probably was about 86. Like,
I love around.
So, aside from what you was experiencing, you know, you mentioned scrapes and stuff when you was, mm-hmm. When you was at home, was there music on? Was you exposed to lots of music?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, my parents didn't have a lot of downtime, as it were, you know, and that's, you know, music is really there, really, to kind of soothe the soul in that way and for you to express yourself in that way. And my mum was in medicine and she was always working. So, I mean, and she, yeah, I think my dad, when I was younger, and, you know, the family atmosphere was a bit more kind of social. It was like old school reggae that he would play. I mean, I can't even name the people that I don't know them and I have to go sort of like looking for them. But I remember him playing, he had a record player and he put on a record, but it's old school reggae and he had these big speakers and I was about the same height as a speaker by that point. I remember being in my nappy. And I put my hand against the speakers because the bass would be like boom, 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 like that. And I'd just be like having the bass go through me, you know. And again, a lot of those stories, those songs had stories to them as well. There was a reggae song he put on called Duppy Gunman, which means like a ghost gunman. Not that my dad was like gangster or anything. He wasn't. He was just like a really normal middle-class guy in a sense. But it was, it was a tune, you know. So he put it on and it had this bass. And I used to love it. Because I also love the notion of this ghost gunman, you know, the story, that sort of thing, you know.
Okay, well, let's stay around that era because for track three, Tanya, I want to know the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Yeah. So I'm sure we all have, like, you know, when you get to school and then suddenly you're with a peer group and then you're being heavily influenced musically because you're hearing all sorts of things that you never heard before and people's styles and tastes or whatever, and people are starting to go to concerts, which is a big deal, you know. And the song that always sticks in my mind of being, you know, representative of that time of my life was The Clash, London Calling. And, you know, I am so far removed from the culture and the circumstances and the environment that created The Clash and created that music. Like, I am an alien, you know what I mean? I'm this little Canadian kid in the 80s. What was that? That was released, what, 79 it was released. But I only became, so in 79, I was 7. And so I wouldn't have heard it then. Especially because I was like at a French convent school. Like, there's no way I would have heard The Clash. Yeah. That wouldn't have been
on the curriculum, would it?
And then it wasn't until later on, when I was at a mixed school, and you know, there started to be dances, and I wasn't really, you know, that I think for kids who had always been at mixed schools and they were used to boys and stuff, dances were one thing. But for me, I wasn't really used to boys or anything. So dances were a totally other thing. I was really into the music and I wasn't really into, like, oh, look, boys or whatever. I was just there to be in my peer group and taking in the music. Do you know what I mean? And I remember hearing London Calling and people getting up, going mad and like pogoing around the room and stuff. And I remember being like, what's happening? Like, this is brilliant, you know? And just like hearing the music again and trying to hear a story, but not quite understanding it because it's so specific, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the kind of what that song came out of, what they were singing about and the environment of London at the time and that group. So it was something I didn't, even if someone explained it to me, I wouldn't have understood it.
Yeah.
But the music and Joe Strummer's like voice, and the fact that you didn't, it wasn't like a dance. You flung yourself about, yeah. You know, it was different. And that contact with the bodies and everything. And I was like, this is it. So I started, it wasn't long after that, I started to go explore the kind of punk scene more and start to go to gigs and start to take on the aesthetic, you know, with the kind of mohawk. Although I didn't shave my head, I would have been murdered by my parents if I did that. But I had my hair like sticking straight up. All the hairspray, you know, I had razor blade earrings, I had like torn every, you know, the lot. I went full aesthetic, yeah. And started going to the gigs, started going into mosh pits, which then we called slam dancing. I don't know
if you call that. Slam dancing. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And
who did you see back then? Can you remember?
Sorry, what was that?
What gigs did you go to? Can you remember?
Oh, no, I can't remember. I mean, and as well, these were a lot of local Canadian bands. This was homegrown stuff.
So did the punk scene hit quite hard in Canada then?
I mean, I'd like to say it did, but I always say that it was really an aesthetic because we didn't have those same socioeconomic questions and issues that came out of here. Do you know what I mean? It was a movement that was born out of a whole sequence of eras over here. Mm. And generation that was using that to express themselves in a really particular way was in Canada. We just didn't have that. So it was more, it was always done as an homage or an aesthetic, but it always attracted a certain type of youth. You know what I mean? Like these kids had issues. Like these kids were dispossessed in some way and they used that music and that culture to act out their frustrations, their hurt, their damage or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I found a kinship with those people, you know, to an extent, you know, I can't say I'm like, oh yeah, I really love, you know, the punk sound, I'm really into it. But I did find a sense of belonging with that crowd.
Yeah.
In a sense.
So let's just chat school before we get on to the next track. How was it? Did you enjoy it?
School. Oh, you know, I look at my daughter, now my daughter's 12, And I go, oh, that's what enjoying school looks like. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's totally different. So, you know, like, so as I said, you know, I started off in a convent, in a French-Canadian convent. And my I come from an Anglophone family, don't speak any French at home. But being in Ottawa, where I was born, this is right on the border of Ontario and Quebec. It's the capital city. So bilingualism is a necessity, right? And my parents recognized that and wanted my brother and I to have, you know, a good start in life. You know, if you wanted, you know, to get employment and everything, you have to be bilingual. So they put me in this convent school, and I remember being dumped in, felt like dumped, in reception or kindergarten at the time with these nuns, and not speaking a word of French, not understanding it. And they would just talk French at me. Again, I say at, because at the time it was, I didn't understand what was going on. I just remember one day they were talking, and it was like, it was, you know, when you come out of a swimming pool and the water drains out of your ear and you suddenly can hear again. It was like that. Suddenly I was like, oh, that's what she's asking me. Oh, she wants to know if I want a cookie. Oh, okay. Yes, please. You know what I mean? And then it was just fine. You just got on with it. You know what I mean? But in that environment, you can imagine what a Roman Catholic convent school's like. It's not an easy ride, is it? It's not a lot.
So was the kind of, you know, was you wanting to get into acting at that point? Was that, and if so, was that encouraged there?
In a way, I mean, I think I wanted to be a director. I used to kind of devise plays with the other girls, and I used to direct them in it. And I think it's mainly because I was bossy. They were always based around some Catholic thing. It was always like, but now this is my Easter play. You know what I mean? The Ascension by Tenure. You know what I mean? And they were very, they would tolerate, you know, I'd be like, oh. But, no, it wasn't until I got into secondary school, or what we call high school over there, that I realized that I wanted to. It's not that I realized I wanted to do it. I realized that that was actually my only real skill, quite frankly. It was a process of elimination. Like, I recognized what I wasn't strong at and what I lost interest and aptitude in, which is basically academic stuff.
Yeah.
That I was stronger in the humanities, you know, languages, sociology, drama, things like that. And I was like, right, you know, let's do it.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you about for track four, the first record you bought, and then I want to talk to you about moving to the UK and how that was. So, yeah, for question four, Tanya, the first thing you remember buying from a record store?
Yeah, well, this is, I asked my dad to buy it for me because, you know, I was too young. I was pretty certain I was 12. And yeah, so I had no pocket money to speak of yet. And I begged and begged and begged for him to go out and buy this album. And it's in a big country, by Big Country. And it was released 83. So I was 11. And so by the time I got a hold of it, it was about a year later.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain. And you remember that time. It was like, this was the era of MTV as well.
Mm.
That was a big shift. I mean, I can't explain this to my daughter. Now, visuals are just the norm, yeah? So Beyonce releases Lemonade. It's the norm that the whole thing is a visual album. The whole thing is a video. It's a massive story. Back then...
And it's there whenever you want it. You can watch it whenever.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I want to... Oh, can I see that song? Like, you know, instead of like, oh, I want to hear that song. Like, let's see it, you know? But back then, videos were like completely... You know, do you remember that Herbie Hancock video? Was that
Rocket?
Yeah, exactly. And with all the, you know, were like Peter Gabriel,
Sledgehammer.
Exactly. These massive videos, and you know, I can't even remember the name of the song because it's the videos, of the course. Visual, the things that you held onto.
Yeah.
And so, Big Country is one of those. It wasn't a particularly impressive video. I think they were just standing on a hill, like playing.
Yeah.
Performance. I think maybe one of them was wearing a kilt.
Definitely. There definitely would have been a kilt in there somewhere.
You know what I mean? But I think it was the fact, I mean, I liked, they had an alternative sound. I mean, I think if you were to kind of like put them in a box, I don't think you would really call them punk necessarily.
Well, Stuart Adamson come out of, he was, before that he was in the Skids. And so he'd kind of found his formative years in a kind of punk band. And then I think kind of sort of moved on and developed that sound and definitely embraced the Scottish culture. And with Big Country, I'd say it was definitely more rock than punk,
you know, or sort of like alternative, bordering pop, because it had so much airplay, right? So there was a real popularity to it, and it sort of managed to get through to loads of different people who wouldn't necessarily like kind of out there genre. But the fact that they had this bagpipe sound, like, I don't know if it was a synth or an actual bagpipe, but I'd never heard that before, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And he kind of part wailed the song in a very punk way, but also he actually had very beautiful vocals as well. He had a really beautiful sound, you know. And they had a black band member. I'm like, what the fuck, right?
Yeah.
This is great. Sorry, I'm swearing. Is that
That's all right. No, not at all.
Like, beat out.
No, it's fine.
But you know, they had this guy who was a black band member, Tony Butler, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
And so I was like, these guys are allies too, period. Like, I love them and I love that sound. And you know, my name Moody, like, yeah, I'm black, I'm Canadian, my parents from Jamaica, but Moody is actually a Scottish name, do you know what I mean?
It's like part of the
and my dad always told me, like, my mum's grandmother apparently was Scottish, but she didn't know her. Like, my mum was too young to really kind of know her. But so I remember her being there. I remember her having really long hair. Apparently she was blind. I remember brushing her hair, and that was it. So I always had this thing of like, oh, like, there's Scots in me somewhere. You know what I mean? Somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think they brought out this kind of romanticism in me. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. That's so crazy, Tanya, that, like, you know, at that point, you know, and it probably still exists in so many parts of the world still, that, you know, you felt a connection because there was a black guy in the band. It's crazy and it's tragic, and it's weird that would be the thing that would really pull you in as well, isn't it? It's just a crazy thing that exists.
Like, yeah, back in the day, I mean, I don't know if my daughter would be like that so much anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's changed so much, in a sense.
Mm.
I mean, my daughter feels a kind of natural sense of belonging in the world. Of course, she's becoming more socially aware now. You know, she's 12 going on 13. And, you know, she's aware of everything that's been happening recently in the news and, you know, George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and everything. And she's becoming much more active and activist in her attitude.
Yeah.
But she wasn't saddled with what we were saddled with as a generation. And I say we, because it's you too. You were part of that generation.
Yeah.
You know, these 80s in your country and mine. Do you know what I mean?
It's totally. And it's what you've just said is spot on. And my youngest daughter's 15. And she just doesn't see color, just doesn't see it. And like, and it's just like, no, it's just people. And like, and which is wonderful to have that. And she wanted to protest, so we was like, okay, we'll take your protest. I want you to have a voice. I want you to feel that you can express yourself. And it is. It's just when I was sort of, you know, 13, 14, 15, I wasn't socially aware to the point where I would go and protest or have that kind of voice. So I think it's brilliant that young people can voice it now and do see it. It's you know, that's encouraging.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The discussions that my daughter wants to get in now, and I've got to catch myself as well sounding old or, you know, not with, you know.
But do you not find that when you try and be damn with your kids, that's when you sound the oldest?
Yeah, or like when you try to punk them on April Fool's Day and end up falling down the stairs like a numbskull.
I don't think there's any better example of it than that.
I have a really good friend of mine who's my age, another actor, and I told him the story and he was like, oh, you muppet. And then he sent me a picture text some weeks later. His leg was in plaster. because he was trying to demonstrate to his daughter how to skip properly.
Brilliant.
And he ended up like breaking his Achilles or something, like tearing his Achilles. I was like, "See, you see how that can happen?"
Oh, wonderful. Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off The Beat And Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up and get back to the podcast.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
See you on the other side. So at what age did you come to the UK?
I left Canada when I just turned 18. And I came over to study at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And I'd never been to London before in my life. I'd been out of Canada, you know, I travelled before that, but I'd never been to the UK.
Did you know people here?
I didn't know anybody here.
Wow.
Nobody. You know, I was just handed over to the care of the college, and they were very good. You know, they had very good pastoral support, and I felt supported. I made friends the first day. You know, got flatmates, got on with my life, really, which is great. But it was a massive culture shock. But I think I did adapt very quickly, because I think when you have the focus of doing the work, like doing a course, if you, you know, I clung on to that absolutely. So you then, all the kind of cultural adaptation comes along with the learning, in a sense. But what I missed out on, obviously, is I don't have the same cultural references that my colleagues have from having been born and raised here, you know, when they were younger. So I've had to learn those, but not any kind of instinctive attachment to any of them. Do you know what I mean? And being Canadian, because we're part of the Commonwealth, you know, after 3 years, if you're under 26 and you're part of the Commonwealth, I think this still holds, then you can stay. You get a 2-year work visa automatically, and you can stay. And at that time, at the end of 2 years, if you're working, you get your work to apply for an extension to the visa, and which is what I did, because I was with the Royal Shakespeare Company. And then I met my daughter's dad, and then we got married, and then we all the, you know what I mean? And then you look back and like 30 years later, you're like, oh God, I'm still here. That's so weird, you know? And now I'm British. I've got dual because after several years of being the spouse of someone, then you apply and blah, 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 you know, there's all these different hoops you jump over the course. But now I've got British and Canadian citizenship because you can have both. Again, having the same queen, that's the thing. That's the whole deal. But I spent less time in Canada than I spent. I left at 18, and I've been here 30 years now.
Right. So, well, let's go back to being 18 for track 5. The song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Oh well, I mean, I chose this one. I was thinking, everyone's probably chosen this. Everyone this age.
You're the first to choose this.
Really?
But I mean, it was up there for me, Tanya.
I mean, come on, this was just absolutely ubiquitous to the club scene. This is Back to Life, Soul to Soul. I mean, it was just being played all the time.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. I mean, that's not a complaint. You know what I mean? The second it comes, like, even now, it's not aged. Even talking to my partner about it when I was choosing these songs and going through the list with him. And we were both like, it's still as powerful. The second it comes on, you're just up. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
It's never aged. But we both were saying the rest of the album isn't as strong in that way. It hasn't stayed. I think there's one other track.
Keep on Moving.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. And the rest of them, but I think Keep on Moving and this one are very similar.
Which both Karen Wheeler, isn't it? Like,
that's probably it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And her voice, right? Wow.
Unbelievable.
Wow. I mean, they were everything to me. And being Canadian, you know, being Canadian in the world is kind of like being the geeky kid, right? Like, we are the world's geek. I admit that. We're a bit of the wallflower culturally, a little bit. I get that. You know, I get how we can be perceived like that. However, of course, when you go to all the Canadian musicians, music makers and actors and artists out there in the world, when you realize they're Canadian, you go, oh my God, Canadians are really cool. But I get how we're seen as being slightly on the outside. And, you know, as that Canadian kid in the club, you know, looking at Soul to Soul as a collective, I was like, these are the coolest people on the planet.
Yeah.
Holy shit. They're just amazing.
Yeah. That beat that is, you know, it's very similar to the beat on both Keep on Moving and Back to Life. Like, mm-hmm, that beat, you couldn't move for that. Like, wherever mm-hmm. you went, it was just, it felt like there was a summer where every car that drove past you, that was booming out the windows, that
absolutely.
Beat. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
So, I like to ask guests what they wanted from clubbing.
What I wanted from clubbing, I just wanted to dance. I wanted agency. I wanted, like, you know, like that social agency that up until then in your youth you don't really get because you're still under the thumb of your parents. Now, I'm not saying I was a good girl. I wasn't, like, you know, home by 9 every night and stuff. I got up to some some stuff, you know what I mean? Like, the times when I just didn't come home. And back in the day, in the 80s and stuff, it was like that. I mean, I can't imagine my daughter that kind of reign now in this world. I would just go out for, like, days. You'd end up sleeping in other people's houses, finding meals, like, just wherever. I remember walking back. So in Ottawa, so we're on the border of Quebec, right? And in Quebec, their licensing laws are different. So you can buy booze, you could go clubbing at a younger age. So, which basically just meant that we could get into clubs because we looked like the age we were supposed to be. But it's not, we weren't actually the right age, but you could get away with it.
Yeah.
See what I mean? And we lived close enough to the border where you could kind of, somehow we'd get there. I think we'd maybe share a cab. And then by, like, the time we were turned out, there are times that I would walk home. I would walk home from Quebec back to Ottawa, back to my home. And it would be like a 40-minute walk or something, 45-minute walk. I'd be barefoot. It'd be like early hours of the morning. And I was never afraid. I was never worried. Do you know what I mean? It was just, that was what it was like back in the day. So that's what I wanted from clubbing. That's what I got from clubbing. that complete, like, I'm in control now of how I express myself, how I entertain myself, who I associate with. And I was never like a, nowadays, I think I'm sounding like an old person now. Nowadays, the young'uns, that's not what I mean. I mean, like, there's a club culture at one point became almost like together with drug culture. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like a sort of like, I take this drug in order to enjoy the clubbing or the, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? They were together.
I think that dropped about 2 years after Soul to Soul, that.
Yeah. Whereas I was never part of that group. I had to be like sober and stuff to really enjoy. I was there to dance.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Not that I never did drugs or anything, but that was a separate activity.
Yeah. Yeah, there was definitely, you know, the late 80s, you know, the ecstasy changed dance music, you know, undeniably, you know, and you had acid house, and then obviously, you know, house music exploded, and yeah, like it's very well documented, isn't it? The ecstasy did completely change the, you know, the landscape of club culture.
It did. That's why I'm not really that into the music that came along with that, because I think a lot of the enjoyment of that and all the creation of that music came out of the drugs.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because I it was almost like hearing a foreign language to me. I'd go, oh yeah, okay. I can see how you guys are enjoying dancing to that, but I would enjoy that. I mean, I do like some drum and bass, but to me there has to be an element of lyricism to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as you can tell by my choices, I like songs that tell stories as well.
Sure.
So if you're going to drop any drum and bass in me or whatever, it can't just be like all rhythm or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something in it.
Yeah. Okay. Track 6. A favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Okay. Now, home county, obviously in Canada, we don't have counties. So I like chose... I interpreted that from my home country.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You won't be the first. That's fine.
And, but also, he is from, if we did have counties, he is actually from there, mm-hmm. right? So this is a guy named Daniel Lenoir. He's French-Canadian. And
can you say that again, please? Because I've always just gone Daniel Lenoir. And like, so how's it pronounced? That's I've never heard it pronounced like that.
So his first name would be Daniel.
Uh-huh.
And then his last name is pronounced Lenoir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Daniel Lenoir. And so he's from Hull. So my city is like, oh, so it's different from Hull here, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So my city is Hull. It's like, so I guess it'd be pronounced Hoon, in a sense. So the Ottawa Hull region is one kind of region. And Hull is where we used to go clubbing. That was the place where we used to go clubbing. And he is a really prolific producer. So he's produced U2, Peter Gabriel. I mean, as far as I know, he lives in New Orleans now.
I think Eno brought him in to produce Unforgettable Fire for U2. I'm pretty sure that was the first time I'd heard of him, and I'm not going to try and pronounce it.
Whereas in Canada, I think in a sense, I have to, you know, hand in heart, that's probably when he dropped Acadie, his first album as a kind of singer-songwriter. That was pretty much the first I'd heard of it as well. Like, he might have been popular in Quebec, on the Quebec side before that, but on the Ontario side, that album was like made a big splash in Canada. And so when you listen to it, it's very atmospheric. It's really like kind of, I mean, I ordered a copy of that album because of this, because of, you know, you inviting me to do this. And it made me realize, oh God, I don't have that album anymore. And I'd love to hear it again. So I found one on eBay and listened to it again.
Did it still hold up?
Yeah. I mean, the sound isn't great, I have to say. You know, so that's in terms of playing it on the turntable. It's not fantastic. It's a certain kind of thing. But obviously, I have attachment to it, right? So I have all the memories. I remember all the lyrics and everything. You know, my partner was kind of like, he doesn't like this kind of music anyway. He's a bit kind of like, you know, he likes kind of harder stuff. So but he was like, oh, it's really, it's really atmospheric. Gee. Yeah. So there's a song on it. My favorite song from it, which is called Jolie Louise, which means beautiful Louise. And it's a full story, right? It's like a once upon a time story. And it's this guy who's singing about how he meets this woman, and it starts off with her, him meeting her. He's like, oh, hello, beautiful. How are you? My name is Jean-Guy Thibault Leroux. And I come from the east of Gatineau, and I live over there in La Fontaine, and I'd really like you to come and live with me. And then he said, and then she, apparently she does. And then he says, well, I got a job working at a mill. And so he's a real working class guy. You know, he's kind of like, it's very kind of Bruce Springsteen-y sort of environment. You know what I mean? It's always about these working class guys, you know, but in this case, they're French, you know, and things don't go very well. He works at the mill, but he's got an alcohol problem, and his drinking causes him to lose his job, and then his drinking causes him to lose his relationship. And then the final kick in the teeth is she takes the kids and she moves to not any other town. She moves to Toronto. And for anyone in Canada, they know that that is like the biggest kick in the bollocks, that she didn't just move to like another city in Quebec, you know, like, so she didn't go to Montreal or Quebec City. She moved to frickin' Toronto, like, you know, the epicenter of English speaking Canada. Do you know what I mean? So she really does not want to hear from you again. It's really like he's lost everything in this song. He's lost everything, his kids, his wife, whatever. And but it's done to this kind of really sweet, folky sort of lyrical way. You know, it's almost like a sort of, I wouldn't say like a kid's song or something, but it's quite beautiful in a way. It's very light. There's a bit of accordion, you know, there's guitar and everything, and he sings it. And you sort of, you hear him singing these different stages of his grief.
We do put a Spotify playlist out alongside this, so everybody will be able to listen to all your song choices, so they'll be able to check this tune out as well.
Exciting. I'd be curious to know what people think of it. It's so specific.
Yeah.
But
there's only a live version available on Spotify.
You see, I really wanted, if you want, so this is to the listeners of this podcast, if you want to hear the original studio version that's on the album, which I think is the sweetest, you've got to go into YouTube. And it'll show the album cover, Acadie, and it will play the original studio recording, which I think is very beautiful. The live version is fine, but if you haven't heard the studio one, then you don't know what it's,
sure,
it's been modified.
Okay, final track, Tanya. You can be DJ now, and you can turn someone onto something new. So for track 7, a song that many may not know that you want them to hear.
Okay, so again, this is some. This might be a bit hard for people to get a hold of. Right? This is Kanye West's Ultralight Beam. Now, had you heard it before I put it on this? Have you heard it yet?
No.
My God, it is... I don't know how to describe it. It is just... Now, I know people have all sorts of opinions about Kanye West. I've been opiniony about Kanye West too. I've cancelled and uncancelled Kanye West more times than you can freaking imagine, because I happen to be one of those people that thinks, I really believe that he has a genius. I really, really do.
Musically, undeniably.
Yeah, I think, and thank you for saying that, Stu, because I have had arguments with friends who say that he's not a genius, but they're not recognizing the fact that you don't like the genre. If you don't like the genre, then you can't say that he's not a genius. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying you have to like the genre. I'm just saying you need to recognize the fact that he's a genius, whether you like the genre or not.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Some people are just really great at what they do. Mm-hmm. And I totally have that. If you're like, yes, but I'm not into Kanye West, or I'm not into that type of music, that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
but
like,
don't judge his music on the fact that he can be a bit of a dick. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
it's like we... You know, we have to get beyond, and there's lots of musicians who say really dodgy things, and I still find myself listening to the songs going, oh yeah, but that's really good. that's
interesting, because this comes up loads. This comes up loads. This whole thing of being able to separate music from the art, sorry, the person from the art.
Yeah,
you know, and can you do that? And I mean, fundamentally, on this podcast, it comes up so many times with Michael Jackson.
Oh, God. Yeah, I can imagine.
So many people's Michael Jackson was so important in their life, and intros, whatever. You know, Michael Jackson wrote some of the most incredible music ever. But yeah. Can you listen to it now, and can you distance the accusations from the art? It's a weird one. And I mean, that's a far more extreme example than Kanye. Kanye just says some dick things, but you know, but he's still, you know, musically, I think, a complete maverick.
I think so too. I mean, it's the same with Morrissey as well. I get it less with Michael Jackson and more with Morrissey, in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
Morrissey.
I still am a massive Smiths fan. Love them.
It's written all over my chest, and it's like, and it's one of them.
Oh, there you go. You see,
it's a weird one. You know, that's the other one that comes up all the time. You know, the Smiths, and it's like, thankfully Johnny Marr's the coolest guy on the planet, so it's fine.
Hello, this is the thing. Johnny Marr saves that, and also I like to tell myself that when they were the Smiths, maybe Morrissey hadn't. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe he was not really developing whatever views, because, you know, we're young or whatever. And I think that I just love the Smiths so much.
How can someone be the voice that everyone needed, that got them through their teenage years, that was the nerdy, awkward one that spoke your language? How can he go from that to saying this? It makes no sense.
Yes, and the thing is as well, like, and I really like, you know, when I bought a few of his solo albums when he came, you know, it's like Morrissey and everything, and I really liked them. And then he started, you know, opening his mouth. And so now I'm kind of like, I get torn. I don't get torn about the Smiths. I get torn about Morrissey, because I still have his, and you know, when they come on, I catch myself going, yeah, and then I go, oh, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh. But anyway, Ultralight Beam, Kanye. Did you manage to get this on the playlist? Did you manage to?
I was putting the playlist together just before we done this. So the last one I got to was listening to Lanois. Is it Lanois?
Yeah, Daniel Lanois. Yeah. Perfect. Because as far as I know, you can only get it on Tidal and not like anywhere else. I don't know if Spotify. I don't know. I knew it was a bit difficult to get to, and it was this album that it's from. Let's see, what's it called again? Life of Pablo, which I think it's a brilliant album, very experimental. I think some of the lyrics after Ultralight Beam get a little bit trite, you know, like, you know, when it's all about kind of fucking models and blah blah, and you sort of go, oh, but somehow the orchestration around the song, the tracks are great. You know, so I'll be like, put it on if I go jogging or something. Well, I could jog, I had a good ankle. I would like put it on and I'd be like, oh, I love the beat, but I'd have to sift through the lyrics sometimes. I would be like, that's not particularly interesting, and then suddenly here's a song where the lyrics are like, that is so great, you know. And Ultralight Beam is just a beautiful, he's a very religious guy, right? He's very Christian, and I mean, I'm a Buddhist. I've been a Buddhist now for like 26 years or something. So I understand this notion of faith, you know, having like profound faith. So when Kanye sings via his faith, you know, like when Jesus walks that track and things like that, I really get it. And I think in those tracks, he really, really shines, because he's got such a profound sense of faith. Mm. Even though our faiths are different, I feel how he completely inhabits the art form because something else comes out of him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that song, Ultralight, all I can say, guys, please listen to it. It's just, it will make you stop in your tracks. I love it. Beautiful.
So when this lockdown subsides some more, and the, I love to use the term new normality resumes, what's coming up? What are you up to?
Well, you know, there's been chat about things starting to film and stuff in September. So, I mean, I do this show called Motherland on BBC, and we had a kind of script meeting some weeks ago, and we were asking the writers, I said, when are we going to go back? And they'd said back then, well, the hope is September. But of course, you know, you don't know how that's going to work for the industry. It's not a given. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, so there is going to be more of that show. That's good news.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wonderful. Yeah. And there are other things, you know, there's two or three other series that I was doing that I was meant to go back to do, but of course everything got put on hold. So we don't know. It's just kind of it's a game of like, okay, is that going to go back?
And sure.
When sort of thing. Is that sort of, I mean, I have a production company now with a colleague, and we kind of get ideas out there to produce. And so we have two projects now that are like in the early stages of development. So that's what I've been focusing on most.
Yeah.
In all of my Zoom calls have mainly been about that. You know, trying to push these projects down the line.
Yeah.
Hope to get them out, you know, get them into full production. But when it comes to making TV and stuff, things can die at any stage, you know.
Yeah.
You constantly be pushing them forward.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, Tanya. I really appreciate your time today. And and had a blast chatting tunes. And and I look forward to seeing whatever comes from you after lockdown.
Thanks, Steve. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thanks loads, mate. There you go. Told you he was going to love that. Absolutely great chat. Tanya was just a brilliant guest. Really interesting. You know, I think when people's stories have that moment where they completely switch location, just adds a completely different twist to a, you know, your formative years and stuff like that. So it's really good to sort of, you know, find out about those, you know, those early years in Canada. So then, you know, 18 at such a young age to just come to the UK, you know, totally on your own is, it's a brave move. And I guess it, you know, it just pushes just so many experiences from that situation that, you know, it was nice to touch on a few. Like I said at the beginning, if you enjoyed this episode, please go and have a rummage in the archives and see what other guests you fancy having a listen to. And if you really enjoy it and want to support the podcast more, then there's also a Patreon page where I put a standalone episode up each week. You can find out all about that at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. All right, thanks once more to Tanya, and thanks loads to you lot for listening, and I'll be back next week. See you soon. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes, so if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stew with him.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.